This is another in a series of Franklin Matters radio shows, number 259 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with the Board of Health Chair Bridget Sweet and Health Director Kathleen Liberty on April 29, 2020. We had our conversation via virtual conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We discussed the recent Board of Health meeting, the new emergency order on facial coverings that came out of it, the feedback that led to this step. Additional feedback will be monitored before the next meeting for possible revision to take still a further step if necessary. We also discussed the hierarchy of the Mass Health departments and how it has been brought to the front lines with this pandemic. The relationship of the executive order by Governor Baker, the Department of Public Health that sets the regulations for all of Massachusetts communities, and then of our local Board of Health that has the ground level responsibility. This recording runs around 36 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Kathleen and Bridget.
This is Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. Today's session, we're joined by our Health Director, Kathleen Liberty, and Board of Health Chair, Bridget Sweet. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
It's a good day. The sun is shining. I'm looking forward to walking in some good weather. It'll be more challenging than walking in the rain. When I walk in the rain, I don't have any trouble social distancing. Nobody's around. Walking today, I expect I'll have some trouble social distancing, but I'll do what I need to do because I want to go walk, and that's part of what I need to do anyway. So.
Right.
So the major topic I think we're talking about today clearly is COVID-19, the coronavirus, and your most recent meeting where you took the next step in issuing the emergency order on the facial coverings.
Yes.
So we're in it.
We're in it. We're there.
We are. And as I recall during the discussion, it was pretty much, this is a step. Clearly you didn't want to go so far. Especially coming out of the gate. The previous advisory around encouraging and advising of face mask wearing, clearly, as we've heard, some people are adhering to it and some people are not. So you took the next step to at least, in clarification, mandate that essential employees of the businesses need to wear it, but the residents are continued to advise to be advised of wearing facial coverings.
Correct. So I will say, Steve, that I had to go out yesterday to a couple of different area pharmacies to get some things for my mother-in-law. And I spoke to both managers at both pharmacies, and they indicated that it was about 90-10. So 90% of customers, even before we created the strongly encouraged, recommended, which isn't even in place until tonight at midnight.
Correct.
But they said up until this point, they're seeing an increased compliance on the voluntary measure. And those that are coming in without masks are sort of almost being shamed right back out by customers, not by employees. So I think that's important to note that it's really difficult to enforce this type of a mandate. And we don't want to be the public health police, but we're creating $300 fines for every single, you know, non-compliance. And we need to be aware that not everyone has access to a clean face mask. If someone does have, a face covering, if someone has a face covering that's not put on properly, it's not covering the nose and the mouth, or it's too loose, or it's dirty. Again, it's not really protecting the public either. So we want to be really mindful and sort of start a slow incremental approach. And as we said this week. Oh, it's been a long week already. It's like ground. As we said on March 39th, that we will go ahead and revisit this if necessary. But we need to be really mindful that this is to promote and protect public health and not create additional burden on any one person. And it's important to note as well that the mask is designed to protect others from the virus spread by the mask wearer, not to protect the inherent public. And again, if you're standing 6 feet away, you're protecting yourself as best you can anyway. And I think that there is sort of a little misperception, because I know there have been some news articles and some TV kind of diagrams where it shows that a sneeze in a grocery aisle can spread 19 aisles over That's a slight exaggeration. But again, even with that spread, the way the CDC defines a contact is someone that's been within that 6-foot buffer zone for a period of 10 to 15 minutes. So unless you're within that close contact for that prolonged period of time, that's really where you're going to have that contact and be, you know, potential contact. Walking by someone briefly, or even for a period of 2 to 3 minutes, is, again, if you're far enough away, you're not going to have that exposure rate. So it's really important for us to really educate the public and make sure that people know that wearing a mask is not a replacement for social distancing. It's not a replacement for hand hygiene. It's really just supposed to be an added tool to allow you to help protect other people, not to be this sort of, you know, hateful rhetoric or, you know, fearful sort of tool. We just want to make sure that people are protecting themselves as well as their, you know, their fellow Franklin residents. And I think to one more point, the challenge that we face here being in Franklin is that we are close to Rhode Island. Rhode Island is a state mandate. Massachusetts is not. We've worked with the AGO. Kathleen and I have been on multiple calls, maybe three to four calls a week. And the Attorney General's office strongly encourages that we do not mandate mask wearing at this time. And the guidance came out. There's been a lot of challenges. I know some of our South Shore communities feel the same, where they're, you know, Scituate, Cohasset, Marshfield, where one or two towns has the executive order to wear a face covering and other ones don't. And really, it's confusing with 351 local boards of health in one state and everyone sort of doing something different. Right. But we still want to make sure that we're, you know, educating and promoting and protecting public health. And it says right here in the newest guidance from the Attorney General on April 27th, that we really should be strongly recommending using all possible care, which would be through education, and that we really should consider adopting appropriate exemptions for those persons for whom a mask may pose increased health concerns. Please consider encouraging people to wear face coverings on an advisory basis. And that's really where we took our information from, was from that sort of recommendation. Kathleen, anything else you want to add to that?
Well, it also says that an advisory is a very powerful tool for the Board of Health and a municipality to take. So, you know, we feel like an advisory equals recommendation, suggestion. It's not vague. It's considered very powerful. But I don't think the public will see it that way. Mandate sounds more powerful. Aren't right, and it is more powerful.
Yeah.
But you know, what's hard with public health is we work behind the scenes, we work in the shadows, and then when something like this happens, when we're in the forefront, there's a lot that the public doesn't understand about what we do, right, and why we do it, and who guides us.
Sure.
You know, just for instance, I had a complaint the other day, and when I said, you know, we are, you know, we get our guidance from the governor and then we're the enforcers. And this person said, stop punting to the governor. And so right there, it was clear to me that, you know, there's not a lot of understanding about what we do behind the scenes. So when we come out, there's a lot of a different perception about us, about the health department.
Yeah, and that's why clearly the why we've been doing this, at least you and I, this is our third or fourth, I'm losing track because I'm not sure what day it is anyway.
No.
But to that end, clearly I acknowledge, yes, you've generally been behind the scenes. And in most cases for public health, behind the scenes is fine. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot there. You do the food inspections and there's over 100 restaurants or food establishments. You do those, and until something goes wrong, nobody knows, right? Now, when something like this happens, you are much more in the forefront. And yeah, so two things at least come to mind. Clearly, we could come up with some sort of chart if it doesn't already exist in terms of the hierarchy. So yes, the governor from executive order, but it's still the Department of Public Health that then trees to you, and you have the local control, right? So you've got that piece. And kind of the other piece in terms of the guidance ratings, if you will, kind of the TSA, you know, a level of alert, right? We're not, it's not a red, right? And there's what, five colors? I forget. I have to go back and look.
I haven't traveled in quite some time, so I'd have to look it up, Steve.
right. I mean, we haven't seen it. But the advisory certainly is clearly right there. It's just below the mandate, right?
Right. And to that, I mean, I think where everything is on the local public health right now, I think that there's a lot of, like what Bridget was saying earlier, there's responsibility that a business has to take, a person has to take for their own health, for the safety of employees. You can't wait for the Board of Health to say, yeah, everybody has to wear a mask. If a business, essential business, doesn't want people in their business without a mask, they have that right. They have that right to turn a person away or allow them to enter. And it shouldn't fall on us to make that decision for all of these essential businesses that are open in the town.
So, Steve, I think it's important to note as well that the Massachusetts Board of Health gets, you know, or the Franklin Board of Health gets their general authority through Massachusetts. And really what happens is that all these state regulations are written to provide a basic minimum coverage. So at the absolute level, every town in Massachusetts is following that minimum requirement of basic minimum coverage.
Correct.
Towns can be more prescriptive and they can have additional requirements. So for example, we see some communities that have additional requirements as far as pools, tobacco, camps, things like that. But again, we didn't make this executive order. So that basic minimum coverage is really the baseline for Kathleen and her office to sort of enforce. We had nothing to do with what businesses were deemed essential, because I know that's coming around too in a lot of communities.
Sure.
People are unhappy that they can't get their dogs groomed. People are unhappy that they can't, you know, go to the dental hygienist. And we understand that. But again, the local level had absolutely no input on what an essential business was. So as those two lists came out in early March and late March, there was no input from us. It was prescribed by the governor and handed down to the local level and said, hey, listen, if these businesses are open, it's up to that office to close them. So at some point, the health department became less of a promoting and protecting public health to sort of, you know, the mask enforcers, the face covering enforcers, and then again, ceasing and desisting enforcers. So running around to GameStop to make sure that their doors are closed, because again, in the very beginning, there was this misinterpretation of essential business and curbside pickup and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, that message sort of got convoluted, but again, it wasn't a local level decision. It was the state told us this is what needed to be done. And then of course, as an elected board member, I don't have to do any heavy lifting. I just check in with Kathleen to make sure her and Ginny are doing all the work. So they've been sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. And then right back to the mandate and the forced closures, I just want to remind people that, you know, Park and Rec and the town and the health department and Board of Health work to close down, you know, fields, playgrounds, tracks. And the amount of non-compliance we saw with that mandate is staggering. And we're still seeing that. So what is the difference between enforcing those closures and those not being compliant?
Right.
And then enforcing a mask or a face covering order and that being not compliant? I guess that's where I sort of, you know, struggle. And again, I have four kids. They haven't left the house. They haven't left our property in, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. And it's, I know it's challenging and it's terrible, but I'm still not letting them go. The only place they can go if they want, and that's with one of us, is the SNET. Because again, there's enough guidance. There's enough of a wide pathway there that they can walk, you know, kind
sure.
of uninterrupted without,
yep.
you know, breathing on other people.
Right.
So I just wanted to make sure people are aware that just because it is an enforcement order doesn't always mean or guarantee 100% compliance. So by sort of ramping up in this method, you know, we put the order into effect. It will go into effect at midnight tonight. We can gauge sort of compliance level. If we do need to revisit it, we're not saying we won't revisit it, but we do need to be mindful of the residents in the businesses in town that may not have the ability to get their hands on, you know, face coverings as opposed to, you know, a medical grade face mask.
Yeah, no, as a, as certainly in the info sharing space, I make sure that I share the accurate pieces to at least make sure that I don't contribute to some of the misunderstandings that are out there. But yeah, this particular disease is insidious. And there was a New England Medical Journal article, which certainly is a worthy source. One of the nursing homes that had been tested, it was 100% of the results. There were positive. 100% of those had no symptoms. So their conclusion was that the solutions, i.e. social distancing, masking, washing, et cetera, we have to be aware of the asymptomatic people as much as we are treating the people who have the symptoms. And that's what effectively we're trying to do. So yes, it's we all have that responsibility, and it comes from the governor through the Department of Health to you at the local level. And then we as residents and citizens need to be mindful. We may feel fine. I may be a carrier. I have no idea because I don't have the symptoms. So if I don't have that mask and observe the social distancing, who could I be spreading it to? Whoever I bump into. But again, to your point, the bumping into needs to be within the 6 feet in 10 to 15 minutes in order to, you know, make the transfer. And I certainly don't want to do that. But if I'm passing by somebody, that's okay, you know? And if they cross the street to avoid each other, that's okay too.
Absolutely.
I'm actually seeing a lot of that, Steve, when I go out for my walk. People are crossing and moving away and are cognizant of, you know, getting too close to someone, even though, like Bridget said earlier, that's not how you know.
Yeah, it's not necessary, but as long as you don't put yourself on, Chloe, and I'm walking on the street and I'm on a sidewalk, I see somebody and maybe their dog walking as well. So they're going to be taking up space. I'll step to the curb, but I'll also check behind me, make sure I don't have a car coming, so I'm not putting myself in danger. So you do, clearly, this is a step in the process. One other point that came up in the meeting, and I think we kind of glossed over it, but enforcement certainly is an opportunity. And being mindful of that, you don't want to add to the police burden for ticketing and or trying to do some enforcement in this particular case, because they've got other things to do.
Right. Although I have to say they've been wonderful in helping me. At the beginning, I had some non-essential businesses that were open, and they were very, very good to me and going and checking on the situation and getting back to me. So I really appreciate the extra help.
Yeah, because I think, and to the extent that they have taken additional precautions, and for those listening, if you haven't heard, I did have the fire chief and the first name is escaping me, but paramedic and firefighter Roy, who's the infection control specialist, or one of them. We had a couple of sessions with them to talk about what they're doing. Sergeant Brian Johnson from the police about what they're doing. And from what I heard from Jamie last week, both of those departments are up at full staff. So whatever they are doing is working.
The fire department was very proactive in starting to screen all the men for each shift, men and women, I should say, and in being proactive like that, and really, really helped with keeping the entire force healthy. I'm not sure what the police did, but the health department obtained thermometers for the fire department so that they could, you know, efficiently take temperatures. They're the temporal lobe, I believe they're called, thermometers that actually we borrowed from the YMCA. They were nice enough to loan them to the health department and to the fire department so we could make sure that our firefighters are protected and screened properly.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, that's good. And I like to see that collaboration. Give a call out to the Y.
Yeah, that. Absolutely.
Good. And in terms of next steps, I believe during the meeting you indicated certainly, and you discussed here as well, that you'll continue to monitor, listen to the feedback from the residents, and if necessary, take further steps, or at least consider further steps if necessary. I believe your next meeting is currently scheduled for next week anyway, your monthly meeting.
Correct. Yes, sir. May 6th.
Good.
And again, I do think that it's important to respect, you know, the businesses as well as the residents and sort of push for an incremental, you know, policy change as necessary, because when we make too many changes at once, it can be overwhelming on both residents and businesses. So we just want to be mindful of that. And again, I do think at some point sort of the social pressure of wearing a face covering is occurring. People are getting, you know, the hairy eye when they run in quickly to grab something and they don't have that face covering on.
Yeah.
I know that. So it's just kind of, we want people to be mindful of that as well.
But to what Bridget said earlier about, you know, entering an essential business and kind of scoping out who's wearing a mask and who's not. I even found myself doing that in the beginning when all this started, because who wants to wear a mask, you know, or cover your face? And I would kind of check it out. Well, all right, so more people weren't wearing a mask than, you know, versus the people that were wearing a mask, so I went without the mask. You know, I think if people start to see that everyone's wearing a mask or face covering on, you know, a constant basis, they won't feel singled out, or they won't feel, you know, you're just kind of self-conscious of wearing this. So I think it's better for everybody if they just, you know, maintain that, right? So, you know, where that's human nature to say, well, he's not wearing it and she is, so I'm going to go with who's not, you know, because it's more comfortable that way.
Right. Well, and it is a significant change because, oh, by the way, up until recently, i.e. before Corona era, people who wore masks were the nefarious folks. They were out to do some, you know, rob a bank or, you know, hold up the food stores. And now everybody's wearing a mask. So I feel weird going in wearing a mask because, no, I'm not going to rob the place. I'm going in to get some stuff that I need. So that kind of stigma and, you know, mental piece, we're going to have to make that change as well, because now wearing the mask, you're part of the good guys. You're the good folk.
You are, but keep in mind, Bridget and I discussed this at length about, you know, the handicapped people who aren't able to put a mask on, or they're not able to put a face covering on. And I think that that's important too, that you can't discriminate against someone who just can't do it. And you're going to do that if you have a mandate. And I don't think I think an advisory includes them. You can't put everybody under one umbrella. We talked about that a lot, and I'm so glad that the board did an advisory and not a mandate, and has that understanding, you know, that there are people who just are not able to wear a face covering for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I think that goes to reinforce the point we touched on a little bit in terms of the state certainly sets the minimum level, and then the local can go and change as required per the local tenor and, you know, content, et cetera. Anybody who's watched the governor's news conferences, he says that at least once per conference, where this is what we do. We do this, we're in conference, he talks to Boston, he talks to Western Mass, he talks to so-and-so, and then we support people who go, as long as they don't go, you know, off the end.
Right.
And he says that, and we're clearly not going off the end here. We're within their guidelines. You referenced the Attorney General's guidance as well. So, yeah, it's a change. We acknowledge it. But, yes. Oh, by the way, our health is the most important thing, because if we don't have that, then what do we have?
Well, it's true, isn't it?
And I think it's really important to remind everyone that, you know, hand washing really is, you know, super important. Every time you return into your home from going out into the public spaces, the first thing you want to do is wash your hands. I know that there's still this sort of misperception that, you know, surfaces may cause you to become ill. And I know people are still sort of wiping down their groceries or their packages. If that makes you sleep better at night, have at it, but it's really not required. I know that there have been studies that show that the virus does live for several days at a time in certain environments, but those are in laboratory environments where they've been sort of, it's the perfect storm. With every air exchange, the virulence of that particle will decrease. So your likeliness to become ill from that is going to decrease. And as long as you're washing your hands frequently, you're going to reduce that risk. And I know that in the beginning of this, and it still seems to be apparent that hand sanitizer is super elusive at this time, I've heard some concerns from people that they're worried they don't have access to hand sanitizer. Hand sanitizer is not required. It's more that hand washing, that vigorous scrubbing for 20 seconds to remove whatever particles may be on your hands. That's the absolute best. Hand sanitizer is when you're in a jam, you know, like some of our inspectors, when they're going in and out of the field, you know, in and out of people's homes, just doing some inspections, making sure they have that quick sort of relief in the meantime until they can get back and physically wash their hands. But it's super important to you know, push that hand washing. We always want people to wash their hands, but now we're being like super, super cognizant of that hand washing and just how important and prevalent it is. And then just one more quick thing. I'm sure you saw in the news yesterday that we had our first dog in the United States test positive for coronavirus. Did we see this?
Really? Not.
Come really? On, you guys. You're not in like COVID overdrive, like your whole life's not COVID.
Yesterday was not safety.
The radar is expanding gradually. I haven't caught that one yet, but now we'll expand.
All right, I'll get you. So wow. In North Carolina, and maybe that's because I have to tally working at Johnson & Wales, I have to kind of focus on Denver, Charlotte, Miami, and Providence. So I have like those four sort of news areas on my radar all the time. But in North Carolina, a dog tested positive for COVID-19. And I just want people to be mindful that the dog got it from its owners and yes. not the other way around. They right. haven't really found a link to show that dogs are going to be the carrier, kind of, you know, like salmonella. We knew that dogs could potentially carry, and that's why we changed pet food requirements. But anyway, just be mindful. Again, if you're walking with your dog, maybe we don't want to let people pet your dog. Again, and that's not because we're afraid we're going to spread illness back and forth, but really just to promote that whole 6-foot social distancing thing. So just kind mm-hmm. of be mindful. It's kind of a bad practice. And I'm a huge dog person. I want to love on everyone's dog, but it's kind of hard sometimes when I'm walking the trail and I'm like, I can't even, you know, I can't pet the dog, but I can still acknowledge my neighbor and say hi and smile. Yes. You know, I don't have to kind of, yes. as I'm avoiding that social distancing piece, I don't have to turn my head and run into the woods either. I do say like, yes. hey, how's it going? Yes. But just want to, I wasn't sure if people had seen that. So if they had, you know, we're aware of it, but it doesn't seem to be, you know, a vector route. It seems to be that the dog was more of a family member and like slept in people's beds and all that good stuff. And that's how the dog got it, was from the family.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's taking it to another level.
Well, it's been interesting, and Chloe, the media, with all due respect, I mean, they're out for getting headlines because they depend upon the ad revenue, et cetera. So some of their headlines are more salacious than others. But yeah, the spread of the virus into, you know, zoos, you know, in tigers and other animals, it's clearly come from us in those cases. Because at least in the cage environment, one tiger is not going to go into another cage to spread it. But
I don't know. Yeah. Have you seen Tiger King?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Probably
sorry.
Not a good example in this under these circumstances.
That's funny.
Yeah, all the cases that they're showing are that there's no concern about contracting it from an animal, but you want to be cognizant that there is the case of human to animal transmission.
Wow. Correct. Correct. And yeah, the reinforcing of the hand point, I think, has come out in, it's added the fact that clearly you do the hand washing so you take the virus away from yourself when you come in from outside. But then the second piece, I think, is clear in there that, and I haven't seen it emphasized as much, but the hand washing itself, the soap, the simple soap, not just the disinfect, but the simple soap breaks down the virus so it becomes, you know, neutered, if you will. So it in itself is not going to spread further. So
yeah, the virus itself isn't particularly hardy. They've done, you know, studies as far as, you know, washing and laundering, you know, the masks. And it seems to appear that between 70 and 80 degrees Fahrenheit with that vigorous motion, it will actually make the, or as you said, denude the virus. So yeah, the proper hand washing is super important. With simple soap, it can just be, you know, and it's really the rubbing your hands together for that 20 seconds. So we have, again, my background is food safety. So I have the pleasure or the, we have a glow germ kit, and I bring it out for the kids, you know, probably like once a year. And it just reminds them. And what it does is it puts this fake sort of glitter germ on your hands, and you rub it in, you wait a few minutes, and then you go wash your hands properly, or so you think properly. And then you put your hands under a black light, and it shows you all the spaces that you've missed.
Yeah.
So I think too, the fact that, you know, WHO had to come out with a, you know, this is how you wash your hands video. It goes to show that with all these competing priorities in our regular lives, a lot of us probably don't wash our hands properly. We probably just run it underwater, do one quick hand pump of soap, do a couple of, you know, rinses, and then go on our way. So actually, I think we have some videos, Kathleen. Maybe we can post them on the COVID site of proper hand washing, or the posters from NRA.
I'm sure everything's up there, but we, anything new, we'll post it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
And yeah. Actually, that's a good point, Steve. The Franklin website has a COVID-19 portal.
Yes.
And it has many resources for the community, for businesses, for anyone in need, or just looking for plain, you know, just information. So it's an excellent resource for the community and business community.
Yep. It's tagged on the top. It's the top post on Franklin Matters, pinned there, so, and has the link both to the town portal, which has a bunch of icons so you can get into the business piece, right. Senior center piece, recreation piece, trails piece, as well as a link to the schools. And the schools have their own portal. Right. With the school information around remote learning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, those are the two town trusted sources.
Right. Into what Bridget was just saying about hand washing. So there's a lot of information. There's videos about social distancing, and not just for everyone. Again, you can't put everyone under the same umbrella. There's social distancing videos for youth as well, for young right. teens. So, and I think even young people, how to wash your hands, there's all kinds of posters. So, and actually probably someone can grab from that and use it at their workplace or whatever. It's an excellent site.
Well, I think we've kind of covered the change that occurred this week in terms of the change from the original advisory to maintaining the advisory for residents to wear a facial covering, but then advancing to a mandate for the essential employees to wear a facial covering. You'll be observing and hearing and listening to the feedback and then reevaluate next week at your monthly meeting. Mm-hmm. We've referenced and we'll include in the show notes the links to the town portal page, so that you get the latest and greatest in regards to any of the tips and tricks on social distancing, hand washing, et cetera, et cetera. Anything else we need to add for the folks?
Patience.
Patience, yes.
I think patience and kindness, because again, we know that it's hard for everyone. It's impacting every single person, you know, in town as well as across the country. And, you know, we're really waiting on that data, that scientific data. We don't want to make any rash decisions at the national or even state level right now until we have that data, and data mm-hmm. takes time. And as we've seen, as people become ill and they're testing positive or they're being hospitalized, the virus is impacting different people obviously very differently. So it's not just that respiratory illness that we're finding now. We're finding that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are having strokes from not seeking treatment fast enough. And it's directly linked to this COVID illness. So we want to be really mindful of that. And we know that it's stressful. I mean, I feel so bad for the businesses that are extended to May 18th. It's not fun. And, you know, we know that, and we're not doing that. And the state's not doing that to punish people, but they're doing that to promote and protect, you know, public health at large. And with the way this novel virus keeps sort of changing and the testing capabilities, we want to make sure that when we do make the decision to reopen, we're not creating a potential, you know, death sentence for others. So just really trying to encourage people to be patient, to be kind. We know it's not ideal. We know it's stressful. You know, it's impacting everyone, you know, a little bit differently. You know, some people more financially, some people more, you know, mentally. But we do want people to know that we're not doing these things to create an undue burden. The state's not doing these things to drag something out or to make businesses suffer. It really is, the ultimate goal here is to promote and protect public health. And that's really, you know, we just want people to remember that. And I know it's hard sometimes to remember that, because when public health is working, it's completely invisible. Nobody cares about it when it's working, when it's effective. But the minute there's sort of a bump in the road, it's, well, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? And right now the state is trying to do all of those. We're doing this, we're doing that. And it's not always the easy answer, but in the long term, it's the right answer.
Agreed. Well said. Yeah, health is paramount, and I appreciate, and on behalf of fellow residents, thank you for continuing to do what you do and keep doing what you do. And I'm sure we'll have, since we'll be in this for a little bit longer, we'll have opportunity to come back and provide further updates.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. And Steve, just real quick, can I just give another shout out to, you know, or a word of appreciation and thanks to all the work that Kathleen and Jenny are doing. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a challenge, you know, going in to tell someone they can no longer operate is fatiguing as, you know, as an inspector, not, you know, because they feel they have the emotional burden as well. So I think they're doing a really great job. I know it doesn't always appear that way, but I would like, you know, I want people to know that they are working really hard. They're trying to be really, you know, mindful and compassionate, and they're not set out to be, you know, they're really just trying to promote and protect public health. And I just think it needs to be, I don't think we can say it enough. And I didn't say it enough at the meeting on Monday night. So I just wanted to remind everyone that they are working really hard and they are resources. So if there's a question or concern that you have, absolutely let the health department know, because again, we don't know unless you're sharing that with us or unless we've exhibited it firsthand. So if you have a comment, a question, a concern, anything, be respectful, be kind, but just let us know so that we can, you know, the department can look into it and we can continue to, you know, evolve our responses based on the community needs.
Great.
Well, absolutely said. Thanks, Bridget. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll second that. And in the show notes for those listening, we will include the links to the Board of Health page, the Department of Health page, so the contact information for Kathleen, Bridget, and the other members of the board, Tim and Jeff, if I recall, yes. all the first names.
Tim Cochran and Jeff Harris.
Excellent. Right. So, yeah. And like you and those two, effectively, you're just residents. You're volunteering for this position. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
Right.
On a volunteer basis, no less. Yes.
I love public health. I would do it all day.
That's why, you know, if you didn't do, and I've said it before, but if you didn't do, both Kathleen and Jenny and you and Tim and Jeff, if you didn't do what you do, I wouldn't have anything to do. I'd be twiddling my thumbs.
I doubt it. I'm sure you'd find something, Steve.
Yeah, something else, but not as important as this. So thank you all.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.